Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is at 1:04 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 4th. Well, there's a lot of activity going on in markets today, but let's stick with what are the most salient points, and that is that Treasury bond yields are breaking out. And now the big question is whether that move is going to be sustained. One of the more important points today was that Bloomberg published this article that highlighted the fact that the Chinese state has been inserting spy hardware into servers bound for the major technology companies in the US as well as government entities. So this is a further iteration of this back and forth between China and the USA, and it also gives, I think, shed some light on the Trump administration's focus on motherboards. So they've obviously knew about this well in advance, and now everyone else knows about it too. Well, the number one thing that people are worried about right now is just how much the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates, because with yields now at just testing the 3.2% level, with the 10-year at that level, the 30-year also above the psychological 3.25% level, the TIPS yield at above the 1% level, these are all significant moves. And that was a very significant upward dynamic that we saw yesterday. Well, we also saw today that the Merrill Lynch Total Return Index has been updated. It was down again, but the much bigger picture here is that the most consistent trend in the world over the last 30-odd years is now losing uptrend consistency. This looks like an evolving Type 3 top formation. And a type 3 top formation is defined by ranging time and size. They tend to be big, they tend to represent massive arguments between the bulls and the bears about which way the market is going to go. Remember, it's not so long ago that people were saying that this is a phenomenal buying opportunity for bonds, that it's a reversion to the mean, that you always buy when you see bonds pulling back, because that is the strategy that worked on every single occasion from 1980 until just the last couple of years. This now looks increasingly like a sell the rallies kind of market, and the most likely scenario therefore is that prices are going to be coming back below 2000 at some point over the next few years. Well, there are philosophical ramifications for this, and there are very clear market ramifications for this kind of move. If this is in fact the end of the bull market in bonds, that's an awfully big question. And the total return chart losing uptrend consistency would very much support that view. Well, if we go back then and look at the 10-year and look at it on a long-term basis, well, we can see that it has been volatile and it's not a particularly consistent trend. There have been periods when yields have rallied pretty meaningfully over the course of the last almost 40 years, but the downward bias has been intact. And if the downward bias is going to remain intact, then 4% would represent a very clear Rubicon in terms of rising yields. There has been a number of statements made by analysts that 3.5% would be where people would think that the yield would represent a challenge for the equity markets. But we're already starting to see that the kinds of instruments that people buy for yield, such as real estate investment trusts, are starting to come under pressure. Then you also have the utilities sector, and that has been pulling back since the beginning of the year, but oddly enough this was in positive territory in here today. Now, one thing that I think is important is to look at not just the fact that they pay a dividend, but and for example the utilities yield about 3 1/3, but rather their dividend growth rates, because it's in an inflationary environment, it's dividend growth is where you get some protection from the rising interest rate environment. But the other point is that we are the philosophical way of thinking about all of this is that social democracy prevailed over the last 40 years, and now that is over. We're getting the rise of populism in direct response to the fact that you have these widening gaps between the rich and poor, and that has been exacerbated by quantitative easing. Quantitative easing is great at inflating asset prices. We have plenty of examples of that, but we do not have a lot of examples of the trickle-down effect that it was supposed to to create. Whereas fiscal stimulus does it by just handing money to people through their paychecks, then that generally does tend to lead to some trickle-down effect. Well, you already have the fiscal stimulus underway in the USA. Then you also have the fact that Theresa May in here this week was saying that austerity is over in the UK. You have the Italian government that has pushed through against advice from every sector that they are going to push through a fiscal stimulus as well. Well, then that's all happening against a background where the central bank balance sheets have contracted by approximately 1.25 trillion so far this year. That's a significant quantity of liquidity coming out of the market. But when we look at, for example, financial conditions indices, then what we're presented with is something different, that financial conditions have been really quite accommodative, that when this index is falling, then we're still in a reasonably accommodative manner. Well, the Goldman Sachs way of measuring that has certainly rallied somewhat since the beginning of this year, but it is nowhere close to the kind of conditions that we had back in 2015 or indeed back in 2008. Well, what I also find interesting here is that the high yield sector has stabilized, that it isn't simply that we've had a decline in in high yield bond spreads for the USA, but that the Asian high yield spread has also been contracting over the last few months, and so has the EU spread. So that tells us that there has been at least some support in these markets for high yield bonds. But now the question is whether that is going to persist with Treasury yields starting to move higher. Then we also have the fact that this has got an air of commonality about it. When we look at, for example, the gilt yield, it was also pushing higher in here today. The bund yield was also up by a few basis points, but gilt yields look to be on the cusp of breaking up out of what is effectively a two-year base formation. And when we look at this on a very long-term basis, well, the yield was at north of 12% back in 1990, and it's at 1.66669, excuse me, in here today. There's been a very well-defined downtrend since 2007, and now the question is whether that is going to be sustained. It's holding out the prospect that we're going to have some additional upward pressure on yields. And for markets like the UK and Australia, where the mortgage market is predominantly a floating rate environment, then that does represent a challenge. So while the fiscal stimulus that the UK is potentially starting to think about, and they're probably not going to be as profligate as the US has been, well, that is going to have to at least make up for the additional cost of rising interest rates have on mortgages and indeed car loans. So these do represent challenges for countries like the UK and Australia. Well, the FTSE 100 today was down by approximately 1%, and this now represents the region of the trend mean. if it's going to bounce, well, it's really going to have to get about it. This is where support needs to be to dip to be demonstrated, so that the progression of lower rally highs since the peak back at in the second quarter is going to be broken. Then, when we look at the ASX 200, well, it was in mildly positive territory in here today, but it really does need to hold that 6,000 level if the uptrend since 2016 is to be given the benefit of the doubt. Well, the most likely scenario is that these indices are going to come under additional pressure tomorrow with the pullback they've had on Wall Street in here today. Well, the technology sector was down in a dynamic manner, and this is increasingly looking like a downside. Well, it's at least probing the progression of higher reaction lows. This is rather a do or die moment. Also, when we look at the VIX index, that it got up to about 15 earlier on today, and now it is coming right back down again. So we are starting to see evidence of a short VIX strategy starting to come back into this market, and certainly a buy the dip is still underway. When we look at, for example, the S&P 500, then it's also coming off its lows in here today. So I think that we are now at a point where people will start to think about buying the dips, and certainly those automated trading systems will start to be thinking like that. But we also have a position where we have approximately a 5% overextension relative to the trend mean, and it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we do get some reversion back towards it. I've spent most of the day today updating the longer term view that I post on the site on a daily basis. But what I think is particularly interesting is if we look at 20 years of data for the S&P 500 Banks Index, it's within striking distance of the peak that we saw back in 2007. Well, obviously the constituents on the of the index are quite a bit different today than they were back then, but this is a pretty phenomenal performance considering the depth of the decline that we've seen and the size of the Type 3 base formations that we have in previous major constituents of the index. And that's a direct reflection of the fact that the banking sector has benefited from quantitative easing. But what's also important, I think, is when we look at the performance of the banks today, they are on the one hand benefiting from the outlook for higher interest rates because of margins, but then also the impact that's likely to have on the housing market is perhaps not such great news for the banking sector, so they haven't held on to their advance. Well, I tend to think that the market has been rather inert for quite a while, so we're probably in for a bout of increased volatility. And not least because of this, I think, increasingly taut environment between the USA and China. The fact that China has been inserting malicious hardware into the goods manufactured there, that's really not great news, because it very simply, who on earth would want to buy a computer that has spyware installed as in part of the hardware? What that also holds out the prospect of is why I'm rather puzzled why Lenovo is still rallying. It really pulled back extraordinarily sharply back in early 2015, and now it has rallied over the last just 3 months to break its downtrend. So I think, considering that everybody knows now that China is actively spying on everything they can lay their hands on, well, why on earth would anybody buy a computer manufactured in China? That's throwing the global supply chain into a state of potential chaos. That why would a company still have an operating facility in China when it is potentially an outcome that they might be banned from exporting those machines elsewhere. This is a very clear potential outcome of this deteriorating situation politically in China. But what it also helps to ram home is the point that the Communist administration is taking a very active role in the management of large numbers of privately held companies within China. And that impinges upon their profit motivation. Well, the Alibaba's shares were down again in a dynamic manner in here today. And this continues to look like a first step below the Type 3 top formation. Tencent has been trending lower all year, and it would be hard to argue why it should be rallying in this kind of environment. It really does look like that investors are starting to take a very or a much more activist role towards these Chinese companies. They look like some of the most attractive short positions I've seen in a long time. That's another first step below the Type 2 top in this case from Baidu. So this is, I think, a very important development, that the champions of of China's evolution in terms of its digital economy are coming under increasing pressure. And not so much because of any particular issue with their business, but because of statist intervention. And this is not a situation that is going to get better anytime soon. So, in fact, it could potentially get considerably worse. Then, of course, you have the potential that Hong Kong is going to have to continue to raise interest rates, and that is going to continue to weigh on the Hang Seng, regardless of what happens in China. So, China continues to represent a significant risk, and the market is shut right now on the mainland, but it could quite possibly open down in a rather dynamic manner when things open again on Monday. Then, when we look at what's going on in India, well, the rupee was down in a dynamic manner in here today, and the Nifty index was also down heavy. Now the Nifty is back below the trend mean. Well, the combination of equity weakness and then also of currency weakness is weighing on foreign investors. So the JP Morgan India Trust has now broken down from this first step below the Type 2 top, and it does look like it is going to go lower from here. Well, that's likely setting up the next buying opportunity for India. India has the benefit of improving standards of governance, and it's in fact it is those improving standards of governance that are weighing on the stock market right now because of the banking sector, that some of the most or I guess some of the practices that have been underway within the banking sector for years are now being probed by the central bank, and that is, I think, in large part, this is a manufactured pullback in the stock market and in the banking sector in order to tackle some of those medium-term risks. Well, once they're tackled, then that's likely to offer really a very attractive buying opportunity into the Indian market, though there's no evidence just yet that this is over. Well, then when we look at what's going on in, for example, the emerging markets, well, the weakness in China is weighing on the emerging markets index. And there's a certain amount of, if we often talk about the Wall Street leash effect, but this is much more of a China leash effect. And in fact, the weighting of mainland shares within the MSCI Emerging Markets Index is going to increase over the course of the next couple of months rather than decrease. So that is weighing on both the index itself and the perception of potential within the emerging markets. Well, the some of the more problem child or children of the in the emerging markets, well, the Turkish lira, for example, was in negative territory in here today, but not in a particularly dynamic manner, and it continues to hold that higher low that was posted at the end of August. The Argentine peso has also stabilized around this 40 area. The Argentinian central bank sold notes today that were yielding 70%, or not just a shade less than that. So in an environment where the currency is just stable, well, then that's a pretty aggressive interest rate. And then we have the Brazilian real. Well, the real has been stabilizing and improving with the increasing potential that a right-wing candidate is going to win the election. Well, that might represent one of the more bullish characteristics we've seen in Latin America in a significant period of time. So the real is now unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Well, this is not getting nearly the attention that it should do, considering the downward pressure that the Chinese markets are putting on the emerging markets indices. Well, Brazil is a big cap market, whereas the Thai market is, well, it's not a large cap market, and it doesn't represent a big weighting. It's been offering relative strength compared to some of the more troubled emerging markets. Well, it is likely to pull back tomorrow, considering the extent of the downtrend that we saw, or the downdraft, excuse me, that we saw on Wall Street. What's, I think, particularly interesting right now is what happens with the Russell 2000. Because the Russell 2000 was the index that broke out first. It had one of the shallower reactions. It bounced back most emphatically. It still has the progression of higher reaction lows. It found support in the region of the trend mean on successive occasions since 2016, and now it's right in the region of the trend mean. So if the uptrend is going to remain consistent, and that people are going to be continuing to bet on the strength of the domestic US economy, well, this index is not going to fall below the 1600 point level on anything more than a brief pop below it. So if the Russell starts to lose uptrend consistency, well, then that is going to be a challenge, because with the emerging markets under some duress, then the US economy has been the very clear standout. And if that also starts to experience some issues, well, then that would be something that we need to pay attention to, and not least because the Russell has been a clear lead indicator for the last number of years. Then when we look at the commodity complex, well, oil prices were in negative territory in here today and down about $1.50, but this is nothing in the way of the kind of downward dynamics that we saw in June, in July or in May. And this just looks like a pause within an otherwise bullish environment generally. Gold prices today were a little volatile, but have continued to hold around this $1,200 area. But it really does need to push up and out of this range to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The silver price, having been in positive territory for a good part of the day, has started to come back down towards this 1450 area. But more important than that, I think, is that it has broken its downtrend since that peak back in June. Now the question is whether it can continue to hold higher reaction lows so that we'll have evidence of demand coming back to dominance in here. Platinum was also a little more volatile in here today, and was finishing out the day in somewhat negative territory. And again, that's another one that needs to rally above 850 to really confirm that things have really changed. Now, when we look at some of the industrial metals, then nickel prices were up in a rather dynamic manner earlier on in the session, but were not able to hold it. The copper price was also in negative territory in here today and reversed an earlier advance. Well, that's a very clear influence that what's happening in China is having a knock-on effect with not just the technology sector, but also the resources sector. And there is the potential that this trade war is going to have more I think it's going to have a deeper effect because let's, for example, think about any administration, not simply the Trump administration, that came into the possession of knowledge that there were a previous partner that it had relied on for manufacturing was subverting the manufacturing process to steal intellectual property from its largest companies. Well, I know that if I was the administrator of that country, I would have start to be taking issues with it as well. I think everyone else would. Well, of course, the other side of this equation is that is exactly what the US government was doing with regard to everything it was sending into China. If you remember, a couple of years ago, there was a significant issue with firmware that had been influenced by the NSA. And that was something that came out in the Edward Snowden files. So, on the one hand, China is simply responding in kind to what has it already experienced from the US government. But the reality is that neither country is likely to accept this kind of condition. Well, when we look at the copper price, it absolutely needs to hold the low around 250. It has rallied enough to break the downtrend. Now, the big question is whether this is a distribution or a consolidation. Well, we're going to find out, I suspect, in the next few sessions. And this is going to be a big, I think, Rubicon for the industrial resources and the potential for recovery. So it's certainly a market that's well worth keeping an eye on. Then when we look at the BlackRock World Mining Trust, it's right in the region of the trend mean. Well, the pound was somewhat firmer in here today, and it's back above the 130 level. So this is holding out the prospect that the pound will continue to steady, and that will represent a challenge for the industrial resources to do better. Well, we looked at the Australian Resources Index, and because of the weakness of the Aussie dollar, that has acted as a tailwind for the nominal prices of resources listed in Australia. Well, the Australian dollar now is coming back down towards this 70 cent level, and this has been really a very consistent decline over the course of this year so far. And as long as it's holding the progression of lower rally highs, well, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. And I do think that if we just take a step back, that the move in treasuries is significant, that the Federal Reserve has little choice but to continue to raise interest rates because it needs to rearm the interest rate gun. And eventually, that is going to cause the next recession. But quite whether it's going to happen imminently or not, well, that doesn't look quite really very likely. Then the issues with the evolving trade war are perhaps the thing that is going to tip the scale over. And that's something that we have not seen. When we think, for example, at the unemployment rate, the yield curve spread, the surge in oil prices, or the performance of banks, none of those point towards a recession. But this uptick in trade war rhetoric is not something we've seen previously. And how much it intensifies, and it does look like it is going to intensify further, well, that is a complete unknown because it's not really something anyone has had to deal with for a significant period of time. That the Cold War evolved over an extraordinarily long time, and markets got used to dealing with it. Whereas there is an evolving Cold War potentially brewing with China. And considering the interconnectivity that the global supply chain has with China, that's going to represent a significant change if that is in fact what's going to happen. That does hold out the prospect for a two or for a bipolar world. And if that is indeed what is going to happen, well, that is going to represent a significant evolution in terms of the way that people view markets and potential. So this is certainly an environment that is worth keeping an eye on. And it's going to be very clear in which way the markets break next week when they open in China. Because if we see a rally and the market starting to do better with clear support for the stock market coming through, well, that will, I think, help to allay fears. If, on the other hand, the growth miracle in China is at the point where it is going to start rolling over again, that is also going to have significant repercussions for just about everywhere else. So, this is, I think, an environment where the international markets are probably more at risk than what we see in the US or in Europe right now. But obviously, the Russell 2000 needs to demonstrate that it can find support. So we have definitely moved into a more risky kind of environment than we've been presented with for the last few months. And I think that is the big takeaway from the markets that we've seen today. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.